Listening Library presents Lost in the Sun by Lisa Graff. Read for you by Ramon Diocampo. Prologue. When we were real little kids, Mom used to take Aaron and Doug and me to Sal's Pizzeria for dinner almost every Tuesday, which is when they had their family night special. I think she liked it because she didn't have to worry about dinner for three growing boys for one night. But we liked it because there was a claw machine there. One of those giant contraptions with toys inside, all sorts, and a metal claw that you moved around with a joystick to try to grab at the toys. As soon as we got into the restaurant, Mom would hand us $2, which is how much it cost for three tries, and we'd huddle around the machine and plan our attack. We didn't want to waste that $2, so we usually took the whole amount of time until our pizza came up, trying to get one of those toys. Back then, I had my eye on a fuzzy blue monster, and Doug was desperate for one of the teddy bears. But after a while, we would have settled for anything. Aaron, as the oldest, was the designated joystick manipulator. And Doug, the youngest, would stand at the side and holler when he thought Aaron had the best angle on the chosen toy. I was in charge of strategy. Mom would sit at the table, waiting for our pizza, and read her book. I think she enjoyed the claw machine even more than we did. We spent 6 months trying for a toy in that claw machine. $48. Never got a single thing. No one else had gotten one either, we could tell. None of the stuffed animals ever shifted position. But we were determined to be the first. Finally, the owner, Sal Jr., made a stop. He said he couldn't, in good conscience, let us waste any more money. Then he got a key from the back room and unlocked the side window panel of the claw machine and showed us.
"See how flimsy this thing is," he said, poking at the claw. "Here, Trent, have a look."
He boosted me up till I was practically inside the machine and let me fiddle with the claw, too. After that, it was Doug's turn, then Aaron's.
"A cheap piece of metal like that," Sal Jr. told us, "it could never grab hold of one of these toys. Not if you had the best aim in the world. Not in 1,000 years, and you know why?"
"Why?" I asked. I was mesmerized. I remember.
"I'll tell you, Trent. Because look."
That's when Sal Jr. grabbed hold of the teddy bear's arm, yanked it hard. It wouldn't budge. You could hear the bear's stitching rip just a little.
"They're all packed in together super tight," I said when I figured it out. "There's no room for any of them to go."
"Exactly," Sal Jr. told me.
He locked the side window panel back up.
"Consider that a lesson in economics, boys."
We got two pizzas on the house that night, with extra everything. Aaron was so mad about the claw machine he hardly ate. He said Sal Jr. had been stealing our money from the start, so it didn't matter if he gave us pizza after. He was still a crook. Doug disagreed. He gobbled up his pizza so fast, you'd never even have known he wanted a teddy bear. Me, though? I was more fascinated than anything. I felt like I'd learned a real lesson, a grown-up one, and it stuck with me. That's the day I figured out that no matter how hard you tug at something, no matter how bad you want it, sometimes it just can't be pried free. I thought about that claw machine a lot after Jared died. Because there were days, who am I kidding, every day was one of those days when I wished I could lift that moment out of my life, just scoop it up with an industrial-sized claw and toss it into a metal bin. Remove it from existence so that it never happened at all. But I knew that wasn't something I could ever do. And not just because I didn't have a magic claw machine with the power to erase events from history. No, I knew I could never disappear that moment. Because just like with the claw machine,
There were so many events pushed up around it that there'd be no way to get it to budge. Everything that had happened before, and everything that happened after, those moments were all linked, smushed together. Still, I couldn't help thinking that if I had it to do over, I never would have hit that hockey puck. Chapter 1. It's funny how the simplest thing, like riding your bike to the park the way you've done nearly every summer afternoon since you ditched your training wheels, can suddenly become so complicated if you let it, if you start to think too hard about things. Usually, when you want to go to the park, you hop on your bike, shout at your mom through the window that you'll be home in an hour, and you're there. You don't think about the pedaling or the balancing or the maneuvering of it. You don't consider every turn you need to make or exactly when your left foot should push down and your right foot should come up. You just ride. But suddenly, if you get to thinking about things too hard, well, then nothing seems easy anymore. When I'd left the house, with my baseball glove tucked into the back of my shorts and my ball in the front pocket of my sweatshirt, next to my book of thoughts, which I wasn't going to take, and then I was, and then I wasn't, and then I did, the only thought in my head was that it was a nice day. A good day for a pickup game in the park. That there were sure to be a few guys playing ball already, and that I should get going quick if I wanted to join them. And then I got to pedaling a little more, and I thought, do I want to join them? And just like that, the pedaling got harder. Then the steering started to get hard, too, because I started thinking more thoughts. That was the problem with me. I could never stop thinking. I told Miss Eveline, my old counselor back at Cedar Haven Elementary, that, and she'd said, oh, Trent, that's silly. Everyone's always thinking. Then she gave me the Book of Thoughts, so I could write my thoughts down instead of having them all poking around in my brain all the time and bothering me. I didn't see as how it had helped very much so far, but I guess it hadn't hurt either. Those guys had been playing pickup all summer. That's what I was thinking on my way to the park. I'd seen them when I was circling the field on my bike, just popping wheelies or whatever, writing down thoughts, because what else was I supposed to do? At first, I'd waited for them to ask me to join in, and then I'd figured maybe they didn't know I wanted to. And now here I was, wondering if I even wanted to play at all. Which was a stupid thing to wonder, obviously, because why wouldn't I want to play? I hadn't swung a bat the entire summer, so my arm was feeling pretty rusty. And what with sixth grade starting in 3 short days, I knew I'd better get not pretty rusty pretty quick if I wanted to join the intramural team. Because the kids on the intramural team, those were the guys they picked from for the real team in the spring, and the competition was tough, even in sixth. That's what my brother Aaron told me, and he should know since he landed on the high school varsity team when he was only a freshman. The middle school team, Aaron said, that's where you learned everything you needed to know for high school, where you practiced your fundamentals, where the coaches got a feel for you. But here I was, the last Friday before sixth grade began, not even sure I was up for a stupid pickup game in the stupid park. This is what I mean about having too many thoughts. So, like I said, it was tough getting to the park. It was tougher still forcing myself through the grass toward the field. The grass was only an inch high, probably, but you'd have thought it was up to my waist, what with how slow I was moving. When I got to the edge of the field, sure enough, a bunch of the guys were there, my old group, warming up for a game. A couple new guys, too, it looked like. And all I had to do, I knew that all I had to do was open up my mouth and holler at them. Hey! I'd holler. I could hear the words in my head. Mind if I join you?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?